From Interfaith Alliance, this is State of Belief Radio. I'm your host, Reverend Welton Gaddy, broadcasting this week from the frigid town of Monroe, Louisiana. State of Belief airs every weekend on radio stations nationwide and is available as a podcast on iTunes and other leading podcast platforms. I urge you to subscribe to it today. And now more than ever, we need you. We need you to join our other generous listeners who make this show possible. For information on making a tax-deductible donation, please visit stateofbelief.com. That's stateofbelief.com. Now, here's what's coming up this week on State of Belief Radio.
Donald Trump has denied reports he used offensive language to describe Haiti and African nations.
The most outrageous comment, obviously, is in reference to countries overseas that might send immigrants to the United States, and the president used the vulgar term, which has been repeated over and over again.
As is so often the case these days, the noise around words from the president of the United States, this time around a coarse expletive and the strident partisan arguments over what he actually said or didn't, effectively distracted the media from the substance of policy changes impacting hundreds of thousands of lives. We'll take a look at this phenomenon and the apparent indifference of majority party lawmakers when I'm joined by Rabbi Jack Noline, president of Interfaith Alliance.
My repentance over this sin 20 years ago was done believing that God's forgiveness is greater than any sin. I'm sorry. And I humbly ask for your forgiveness.
As the hashtag MeToo movement continues to raise up the voices of persons impacted by sexual harassment and assault, it's clear that consequences for those accused depend greatly on their profession, stature, and even political affiliation. Just ask former Senator Al Franken. In the realm of organized religion, the concepts of obedience, surrender, secrecy, and redemption all make serious transgressions easier to perpetrate and easier to hide. Dr. Jessica Johnson has written compellingly on this subject in Religion Dispatches and will be with us to share her thoughts. But first,
you heard the president say he wants a bill of love for the dreamers. Where's your love?
We have love for the rule of law.
Religious leaders are now teaming up with the so-called dreamers.
Religious leaders are wanting to have their voices heard.
A prayer vigil for dreamers.
The multi-faith movement for justice has coalesced around one issue like almost no other. With a clarity of moral vision and uncompromising rhetoric, leaders from across the denominational spectrum have stepped up again and again to address the immigration crisis in this country. As the current administration plays politics with the lives of various groups of people, seemingly on a whim, we've seen congregations provide sanctuary, ordained leaders endure arrest and abuse, and religion-inspired voices speak out in ways that galvanize even secular Americans' thoughts on the subject. Most recently, late this past week, the halls of Congress were flooded with a diverse coalition of activists calling for action on DACA, the Deferred Action on Childhood Arrivals policy, arbitrarily scheduled for termination by Donald Trump, himself, the son of an immigrant mother. A leader in this work has long been the organization Faith in Public Life, and I am really happy today to be joined by Sarah Benitez, the group's immigration program director. Sarah, welcome to State of Belief Radio.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
I'd like for you, if you would, to begin by talking about the work that you were able to do in coalition with partners like Bend the Arc in Washington and beyond this past week.
Well, this past week, and actually all the way back to the inauguration last year, we've been lifting up the voices of a diverse array of faith leaders, from Latino evangelical leaders in support of DACA right after the inauguration, to interfaith leaders getting arrested on November 1st in the Russell Rotunda in support of the DREAM Act. And now this week there was a coalition of Jewish leaders and rabbis who also participated in civil disobedience and were arrested. And throughout all this work, we've been working closely with United We Dream and young immigrant-led organizations to be in solidarity and partnership with them as we work together for a Clean Dream Act.
Sarah, there's been so much being done by individual congregations in terms of offering sanctuary and support for both undocumented persons and now increasingly family members left behind by abrupt arrests and deportations. Is there organizing going on that helps these congregations and communities learn from each other and even share resources if needed, or is this still happening in a somewhat disjointed but effective way for the most part?
There is a national sanctuary movement with listservs that coordinate across the different states. And in fact, this Tuesday in Columbus, Ohio, one of my colleagues with Faith and Public Life was part of a local coalition that did a video conference with folks in sanctuary, one person in Columbus, and then also North Carolina, Pennsylvania, and Texas, to all share their stories and talk together and share that with a audience on Facebook Live about their experiences. So this is part of a coordinated, growing movement of congregations and local coalitions across the country.
Could you talk about one or two specific cases that you're aware of that help paint the picture of the very real human toll this kind of political gamesmanship is having?
Yes, and you're right that we need to really focus on the human side and get to know the individual stories of the people who are affected by DACA and what will happen or what is happening to them in this moment. So one young man I know, he works for a local immigration advocacy organization in Maryland, and he only has 400 days left before his DACA expires. That's a little over a year. And that means that every day that while he's working to turn out voters or advocate on issues, he's also very much aware that this debate that we're working on, the political outcome, the policy outcome, will have very real consequences for his daily life.
My goodness.
This summer, I actually had lunch with a young woman who goes to Colorado College in Colorado Springs, and I'm from Colorado. She was interning here in D.C. at the Catholic Legal Immigration Network called Clinic. You know, she has DACA, but frankly, she wasn't as worried for herself as she was for her own mother, who is undocumented, and her younger sister, who is 9 years old and a U.S. citizen. And she said, you know, I don't know what would happen if something happens to my mom, because then, you know, my siblings and I will have to figure out how we take care of my sister. And it just really struck me, and that was before DACA was at risk. This summer, and I told her, you know, don't worry. As far as I know, we've been seeing DACA safe, and if they ever come for it or something happens, we'll all fight to the end, and we're going to still be fighting for undocumented folks like your mom. And that very afternoon was the day that the attorney generals, led by the state of Texas and 10 other states, sent their letter calling on the administration to end DACA. So I think about that young woman every single day, knowing that it's about her, her mom, her daughter. It's about whole families who have mixed status and are really doing everything they can to stay together while living with this intense pressure and fear that it could all end any day now.
When you're on Capitol Hill, how receptive are lawmakers to rational appeals on this issue?
So I would say lawmakers have been fairly responsive to the human stories and the human side, and that rational appeal about what to do about easing the human suffering that is being caused has frankly been less so. This is where we're stuck at right now, is that it's turning into a political inside baseball issue instead of staying focused on finding solutions for real people and maintaining the human dignity that's at the front of this issue.
So what do you think changes once meetings with Faith Inspired and other immigration activists are finished and the microphones and the spotlights are turned on? What's compelling these people to take such a harsh tone?
What we've seen is, frankly, the rise of white supremacy. Mm-hmm. The anti-immigrant groups that make phone calls into congressional offices every day saying absolutely no amnesty, no what they're calling chain migration, which is family reunification, mm-hmm. are the same groups that are behind the white supremacy and neo-Nazis we saw carrying torches in Charlottesville. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, members of Congress are being persuaded to listen to those folks. At the same time, they are being able to dehumanize, to stop seeing that the numbers are individual people with families, with communities, parts of schools and churches who are our neighbors, our classmates, our friends. And so I think those are two of the issues that are happening of why faith leaders and dreamers together have worked so hard to keep the human faith out front by being present on the Hill, by telling the stories as much as possible to keep the human faith at the very forefront of this issue.
When something unexpected happens, like, say, the recent spate of raids on 7-Eleven stores nationwide,
yep.
is there an organized response that the faith-inspired activist community is able to muster? Are things organized enough at this point?
I would say yes. Since the election last year, there are raids response networks with hotline phone numbers and call lists or text message lists that are able to mobilize rapidly, and many faith leaders and communities are part of those across the country, as well as, you know, being tied in with the national organizations, those of us in D.C. who are hearing about what's happening on the ground, then being able to elevate that work locally. So many of the sanctuary coalitions at the local level are also have those rapid response or raids response networks that are able to move quickly.
Give our listeners the information on how people can get more informed about your work and also get involved in it and support it if they want to.
You can go to our website, which is faithinpubliclife.org, and sign up for regular email updates. If there are specific issues you're interested in, you can select that there and you'll be able to get messages when we're doing work on immigration or healthcare or tax reform and how you can take action locally. You can also follow us on Facebook at The Real FPL, or that's on Twitter mm-hmm. and on Facebook. So those would be the best ways to reach us. And again, that website is faithinpubliclife.org.
Sarah, you may be fooling me, but I don't think so. When I listen to your voice, I hear excitement, I hear dedication, I hear passion. Why are you doing this, and how do you feel when you go to work every morning?
Yeah, so I'm doing this because I grew up as the daughter of an immigrant in southeastern Idaho. It's between Wyoming and Utah in a pretty small city community with very few Latino immigrants there. And I grew up seeing how, even though my father, who came from Venezuela, had a student visa, was able to legalize through my mom, other Latino immigrants in our community who mostly worked on farms, like my mother's family, who's Mexican-American and had been farm workers, were treated so poorly and talked about as though they were less than human, when all they were just like me, except for lack of papers. And so I've always felt that call to make that right, and that our country has a long-term issue we need to work on, to recognize the humanity of all the people who live here and who are part of our communities. And being at Faith in Public Life, I get an opportunity to do that work every single day, more important now than ever in this crazy time we live in. And to do it from a faith-based perspective where we get to call our leaders to their best selves and to remind them of what the moral, humane thing to do is. So that is very fulfilling as much as it is challenging these days. And I'll be honest, there are mornings where that's hard. But I know that many people are counting on the work we're doing, and that continues to fuel my fire.
Sarah Benitez is Immigration Program Director at Faith in Public Life. The organization's been playing a leading role in addressing the cruel and immoral attacks on immigrants this administration has been orchestrating from a prophetic, multi-faith orientation. Sarah, I really do appreciate you being with us today and sharing not only information, but sharing a part of who you are. You're always welcome on State of Belief Radio.
Well, thank you so much, and I appreciate you lifting up this very important issue. I would encourage people to sign up so they can learn how they can keep lifting up their voices around DACA and the other issues that are affecting vulnerable communities these days.
We've got to take a quick break, but there's lots more still to come on this week's show. You'll hear Jessica Johnson on the special challenges facing sexual harassment and assault victims within organized religion. And up next, Rabbi Jack Moline, president of Interfaith Alliance. I'm Welton Gaddy. You're listening to State of Belief Radio, brought to you by Interfaith Alliance.